Welcome to Intuitive Transformations with your host, Sylvia Henderson, and discover tools, wisdom, and inspiration that will empower you to transform your life. Sylvia is an intuitive life coach and energy healer with a growing practice that is focused on empowering others to be more of who they want to be. For the next hour, join Sylvia and explore and unravel anything in the way of you creating the life that you would love to live on the Om Times Radio Network.
Well, hello and welcome to the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show, where you will find tools that you can use to change and transform your life every Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Om Times Radio Network, the voice of consciousness at omtimes.com. This is Sylvia Henderson, your host, and if you would like to learn more about me and the work that I do, please visit my website at intuitivetransformations.net. That's intuitivetransformations.net. And be sure to join my email group so that you can download a free 20-minute healing audio called Healing Fear During Uncertain Times. And this audio was developed to support you in releasing fear, worry, and anxiety, especially during times of change and uncertainty. I also invite you to take a look at Energy Alchemy, which is a 60-minute potent group healing call that I offer twice a month. Jan Zatman from the United Kingdom joined us on our previous call, and she sent me an email. And I just want to share really quickly what she wrote. She wrote, "The calls are so powerful and offer the fastest transformation I have ever experienced. I felt a river of energy flowing through me for many hours after the call. In fact, I woke up the next day and still felt the increased energy flowing, and I'm continuing to connect to it more. Now that I know what it feels like, I want to connect to it more." So that's just a little bit of feedback that I wanted to share with you. If you were not sure what Energy Alchemy was all about, this month, we released blocks that kept us from the truth of our intuitive knowing. And in April, we're going to release obstacles that block us from remembering our power to transform our reality. You can learn more about Energy Alchemy on my website at intuitivetransformations.net. Well, today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017, and yesterday, the world witnessed another tragedy in England when a car drove into a group of innocent bystanders, killing four on the Westminster Bridge near the British Parliament and injuring many more. First, I want to ask you to please send prayers and your healing intentions to all of those who were involved and directly impacted. And please send healing prayers and intentions to all of humanity. We are definitely in a very intense season of change, and it appears that tragic news is becoming more than normal than not. So I want to encourage you, in spite of what we are witnessing in our world, to not give up hope, because we are witnessing in our world today this season of change that is waking up humanity to the truth of oneness. So we're waking up, although not very easily, but we're waking up nonetheless. So during this season of change, I want to advise you to exercise lots of self-care. Be mindful about what you choose to focus your thoughts upon. If you're feeling overwhelmed, then disconnect from the news. Limit your time on social media. Get lots of rest. Eat healthy foods. Meditate, chant mantras, walk in nature, do whatever works for you to raise your vibration and not dwell on fearful thoughts. And as you raise your vibration individually, I want you to know you're also raising the vibration of everyone else around you, because we are far more connected than we even realize. Oneness is real. So consciously choose to focus what you focus on, and choose your thoughts wisely, because when you reach for compassion and unconditional love, you're making the best decision for yourself, your family, and the future of the world. That's just how powerful you really are. Today we are going to talk about why we choose what we choose. Ann Tucker is joining us today, and she has created an easy-to-use system that allows you to better understand why you decide on the choices that you make and how to easily identify your personal decision-making soul type. So let me tell you about this remarkable heart-centered woman who I happen to know personally. I met Ann last year at a local meetup group she hosted where she demonstrated the process that we're going to talk about today. And I was so impressed that as soon as the event ended, I went right up to Ann and I asked her to be on the show. So let me tell you a little bit more about her before I bring her on. Ann Tucker is an effective and recognized speaker who has addressed audiences around the world on the topics of leadership, personal transformation, decision making, and the psychology of doubt. She is the founder of Wisdom Soup, an online social learning community that speeds up serendipity by connecting people with similar interests in spirituality and personal growth. And she's the author of Undoubtedly Awesome, Your Own Personal Roadmap from Doubt to Flow. Decision making has been an ongoing focus of Ann's 20-year career, during which she has worked with some of the most influential business leaders of our time. Ann developed her methodology for understanding decision making by soul type during her years as the co-founder of Gray Matter Partners, a leadership development firm based in Seattle, Washington, where she worked with senior executives and others teaching a coaching process that one client referred to as his awakening. Ann's clients are able to reduce ambiguity for themselves and their organizations, see their strengths and opportunities with more clarity, and move forward on an ever more clear path to achieving their goals. Ann Tucker, welcome to the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
I am happy to have you here, especially since you're a local resident, and I had the pleasure of meeting you in person and enjoying being in your energy. So I am just really curious, when did you first become interested in the psychology of doubt and decision making?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's something that evolved very naturally. I've been involved in decision making for most of my career. I started out as a negotiator for Microsoft way back when. And then when I went into consulting, leadership development, it was very natural to focus in on decision making since it really is, you know, decisions are at the beginning of everything we do. And they determine what comes next. So when you're trying to focus in on helping a client, looking at how they make decisions is a really powerful access point. So it just was where I always naturally looked. And it was through the process of working with clients. I would be getting feedback from them about themselves and then about everybody, from everybody who knew them. And patterns started to emerge. I started to recognize that certain strengths came together and it all centered around this decision making. And I started to understand there was something much deeper here. And it took a process of about, 8 years of really trying to finesse it to understand how it all fit together that I came up with this model.
Well, it's a fascinating model because what was lovely about it, is I got to experience it personally, and I was really in awe because, you know, it was so spot on. So, you know, people find making decisions very difficult. Some people, not all people, but I don't know, maybe more than not, even when there isn't a lot at stake. You know, for instance, when they're reading a menu, you know, it's hard for some people to even choose what they want to eat or what restaurant they even want to go to. What is going on, right? What's going on inside the mind that causes some people to make decisions very easily while others dread the thought of having to make any decisions?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and it's interesting because the truth is that it's different for each of us, and it does get down to this idea of soul type, that the place where doubt and ambiguity are largest for you is going to depend on the specific process that you as an individual use. So some of us experience a lot more doubt on the beginning side of a decision. As you're entering in, it'll be harder to make that initial commitment. Maybe you'll be dealing with too many options and not able to discern which one you like best, or torture. Maybe you think it's one and then you think it's the other. And for other people, it's more on the back end, as they find it's really, really easy to find something they like and to choose it, but then they enter into the process of regret or second guessing themselves or going back and revisiting. The decision never closes. So, and that pattern, depending on where it hits you most, is going to depend on your specific soul type of decision style that you're using. It really is, like I said, it's one of the key things to look at in terms of how it's coming up is that idea of ambiguity, because your decision process, each of us has our own decision process that works great for us. It works most of the time, right? That's how we get things done in the world. And it's designed to limit ambiguity for you. The whole point of it is to help cut out enough ambiguity so that you can feel good about the choice that you make. But sometimes it doesn't work right. Sometimes it lets you down and it lets in too much ambiguity, and that's where that doubt creeps in.
Yeah, so when you say ambiguity, can you flesh that out for those who are listening?
Sure. So, ambiguity. Yeah, well, anytime you go to make a decision, you're going to be faced with lots of stuff you don't know, right? When you go to buy a car, think of all the things you don't know about your car purchase. No matter how much research you do, there's no possible way you would know every single thing there is to know about the car, right? You don't know the people in the factory who assembled it. You don't know every single working part, right? You don't know how it's going to perform in 5 years. There's way more stuff that you don't know than you do know. And all of that stuff that you don't know is ambiguous. It's unknown. And so when you're choosing, you have to get to a place where you feel like you know enough, where that ambiguity is contained, where we put arms around it and say, okay, this is what I'm going to focus on and this is what I'm going to ignore. And that ambiguity, if we end up opening those doors a little too far, we open up and let too much ambiguity in, that's where we start to get into trouble. And that's just that sense of what we don't know about the decision is ambiguity.
That makes great sense. Thank you for explaining that. We're going into a break, everyone. When we return, we'll talk more about the decisions we make and how we make them with Ann Tucker on the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show. Stay tuned for more.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I built secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I did the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Sylvia Henderson on the Intuitive Transformation with the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show on HomeTimes.com, and I'm here with Ann Tucker. And before we went into the break, Ann, you were talking about one of the hurdles to making decisions had to do with ambiguity. And that really is that uncertainty of what the outcome is, because you know the facts that you do know, but you also are keenly aware that there's a lot of facts that you're not aware of, or that you don't have knowledge of, and this kind of trips us up. So you talk about the importance of loving our decisions, and is it possible to love our decisions from this point of view, knowing that we are not sure about the outcome while we're making it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, think about like how many of your decisions that you do feel good about. And there's lots, right? There's going to be some decisions that you that you're really, really satisfied with, and there's going to be some that you aren't. And the real puzzle is why, right? Why is it that there's some that we feel great about and some that we don't? When we're the same person, we end up thinking that it's because of the thing that we chose. We think there's something about the item that we chose, or the person that we chose, the career that we chose, that makes it better or worse. And what's really interesting, if you understand the how decisions are made and how it affects you, you start to see that it's less about the thing that you chose, and it's more about how you choose it. That the process that you're using is what's making the difference about whether you enjoy something or you don't enjoy something. And it is that process, what happens in your mind as you're thinking about your decision, that's so important. So in terms of why is it that we, or how do we fall in love with a decision? Well, what ends up happening is if you go through, if your decision process is working on all cylinders, everything's working great, you're going to end up using or taking advantage of a natural process in how you think that's going to enable you to become emotionally invested in your decision. And it's a process of stepping from a place of comparison where you are at the beginning of a decision. And then once you actually commit to the decision, which is a multi-step process, then you enter into a place where you start to separate your decision away, the thing that you chose, away from everything else, and you become emotionally invested in it. And it's a very specific curve that you can find, a very specific decision curve, a process that you go through. And this process it looks a little different for each of us, but if we follow that process in our own way, we end up feeling great about our choice. When we don't follow that process, when some part of it breaks down or we stay too long in a piece of it, that's where we run into problems.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, and when you're not emotionally invested in your decision that you made, then you're really teetering on, and in some ways, does it reflect back on how you feel about yourself as a person?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what's so interesting about it, is because I think we get really confused about this idea that there is something specific about the thing that we're choosing, and we have to find the right one, that there's going to be one thing. If you're choosing between, you know, two different cars, that one of them is going to be the right choice and the other one is going to be the wrong choice. And it's up to you as a decision maker to be smart enough or to work hard enough or to look far, you know, far enough to find the right answer to pick the thing that's best. And we invest the item we're choosing with all that importance. When the truth is, like I was saying, is it has less to do with the thing and a lot more to do with how we pick it. So we get really, because of the fact that we think that it is it's a matter of being smart enough or good enough, that when we don't make the decision well, when it doesn't turn out right, we think it's because we did a bad job. So we're very hard on ourselves. So when decisions go badly, we end up doubting our own ability to make good choices. So it can be really destructive, because then it sets you on this whole path where you start to doubt yourself more and more. You start to think, well, okay, that other decision went poorly. Maybe I'm not good at picking cars. Maybe I'm not good at picking good relationships. And we start going down that path of undermining our choices more and more.
That is such an important point to bring out, because then what happens over time is you start collecting more and more evidence that continues to validate that belief system.
Right.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, even before I knew you had a book in the works, was when I attended your Wisdom Soup meetup group that was held not far from where I live. And in this group, you had about 30 people in the room. You had us all stand up and separate into groups based upon instructions that you gave us. And by the end of the meetup, we each landed into what you call our specific soul type group. And this instructions you gave us were all based upon how we made decisions. And to me, this opened a whole new window that the Enneagram and the Myers-Briggs personality typing misses. And it was simple and it was easy and it was so spot on. So before we go into the seven different decision-making soul types, I want to know, how did you come up with this process? Because it's ingenious.
Well, thank you. You know, I mean, I like to think that it was inspired. I think, where do all great ideas come from? You know, they come from that great idea space in the sky. And, you know, it developed over time. And it was one of those things where it just became clear to me how this all worked. And I, you know, and then I had access to all of these coaching clients that I was working with, where I could test it. I'd try things and I would try, and I was able to prove it over time, over and over and over again, and refine it and make it better. But the original survey that I did to figure out the soul types, you know, it started out 20 pages, then I got it down to 5 pages. And then I finally realized, ooh, if I make this into a flow chart, I can get it down to 3 questions. And it works like hot darn. So.
Spoken like a true former Microsoft employee.
Right. Exactly.
So, and without going into the process of how we can determine our soul type, I'd like to first talk about each of the 7 different soul types. You know, what their decision-making processes might look like, what they excel at, where doubt can creep in and work against them, and what they can do to enhance their decision-making process, because everyone wants to make fantastic decisions and feel comfortable with their decisions and safe in their ability to make decisions. So first, let's look at the very first soul type that you have listed in your book, and that's the optimizing soul type. Can you tell us how they make decisions, where they excel, where they are most likely bump up against doubt, and what can they do to enhance their decision-making process?
Sure, yeah. So the optimizing soul type, and I think it's important to know with each of these soul types that the specific way that you make decisions is complementary. It essentially enables your strengths. And it's hard to say chicken and egg, which comes first. Is it the fact that you make decisions this way that gives you the strength, or is it the fact that you have the strength makes you make decisions this way? I'm not sure which one comes first. I just know that the two are infinitely connected. So for the optimizing soul, what their decision style looks like is they tend to, they'll enter into a process and they will fall in love with an idea right away, right? They'll be inspired by an idea. And rather than going through a process of researching and comparing options like other soul types might do, they will instead take a little shortcut and they will only search for information that tells them that confirms that their idea is right. And this is a really important, and from there, they immediately, from that moment forward, once they've confirmed that it's right, that it's possible, and there may be information out there saying that it's not possible, that this idea has gone badly in the past, but they'll ignore that. They'll only look at the information that tells them that it can be done, and that's enough for them to say, oh, that other bad stuff, that's not going to apply to me. This good stuff, that's going to apply to me. I'm going to make this happen. And then from that moment forward, they're living in the future state of this idea already being true, of already having happened. And what's so important about this process that they use is it enables them to be extremely innovative, is that they are able to create new things out of nothing, to take things that are existing and combine them in new ways. So any of the words that start with the letters R-E, so rethink, redesign, reimagine, renovate, anything where they're taking old things and creating innovative out-of-the-box solutions, that's the domain of the optimizing soul type. They are the true innovators. And so their role in terms of how we all solve problems is going to be around figuring out new solutions is their real strength. And it can come in the form of remodeling a house. It can be in the form of coming up with new processes to solve problems. So they're always going to be looking to optimize things. That's the name, optimizer. And the place where they get into difficulty in terms of where doubt creeps into their process is because of their strength, right? Their strength is is the process that they use to make decisions, is they skip over that lengthy comparison mode that most of us go through, where we are evaluating different options and thinking them through. They instead, they check to see if it's possible, and they jump to that future state. And that does enable them to better realize their ideas, right? They're able to stay in that future state, and it's, you know, we all say our thoughts become things, where their thoughts are already out and their ideas have already been created. So their thoughts are already becoming things, and that does help them in terms of their role, which is to create stuff, to come up with these innovative ideas. However, the fact that they don't take that time to compare things, to go through the process of really looking at all of the options and to listening to that disconfirming information, well, once they've gone down the path of trying to make this idea come to pass, they are going to have at some point that moment where they realize, I didn't maybe think this all the way through, or maybe there's gaps in my thinking. Maybe there's things I didn't realize that I should have done or could have done, or I didn't, you know, I only listened. There was maybe some bad information that where this isn't going to work, and I didn't pay attention to it. So that's where they end up. Their doubt creeps in is because of that specific shortcut that they use that enables their strengths, but also opens them up to doubt.
And then what about the learning soul type?
So the learning soul type is interesting because the learning soul type, in a way, is a balance to the optimizing soul type. They also, their strength is also around figuring out solutions. So both of them are focused on that aspect of problem solving. The learning type also is involved in figuring out solutions, but they do it from a totally different approach. They are the masters of logic and reasoning. Our learning soul types are extremely excellent thinkers. So they will reason their way through every problem and logically be able to analyze things in a way that is usually beyond the reach of most of us. And they do this, they have a real love of mastery, that they love to become truly expert at whatever subject or whatever topic they're talking about. They love things where they can get really, really deep and develop that expertise about things. And their strength as a decision in terms of the process that they're using to make these decisions is it tends to be very measured. You can imagine they're going to go through each step, and they're not in any particular hurry with their decision making. They tend to go through in a very measured way, and they want to get as much information as they can to be able to know which is the right path.
Awesome. So when we return after the break, I'm going to have you finish explaining that particular soul type, the learning soul type, and we're going into a break. Please stay tuned, everyone, for more of the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show on OhmTimes.com.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hey, let me ask you something. Would you seat your 3-year-old child on a windowsill? Would you seat them beside a lit fireplace or by the deep end of a pool? One last question. Would you seat your child in a car seat that's not correct for them? Car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Secure their future. Seat them in the correct car seat. For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we are back. And before we went to the break, you were just finishing up on talking about the learning soul type, and you had talked about their benefits. So where do they get into trouble with doubt?
So their doubt, of course, comes from one of their strengths. And the strength that they have is that they are, of all of us, they are the most neutral energy, right? So they are able to stay open-minded about a particular decision longer than the rest of us, which makes them very, it helps with their logic, right? Helps with them, their ability to reason their way through things, is they don't tend to get, they don't fall in love with their choices too quickly. They don't tend to get swept away in the emotion of something. They can stay in this detached mode, which allows them to take in new information and see things a little bit more clearly than the rest of us do. However, where that can get in the way is that they're very comfortable in that place of observation, of that place of neutrality. And sometimes if they get into a decision where they're not quite sure what to do, if it's not clear, if the landscape just isn't clear yet and they can't come to what is the best decision, and the learning soul types, they tend to want a very high degree of certainty. So if they're not certain, what they'll do is they'll just stand back and they'll wait. And they'll wait to see if the landscape changes to be able to make it clearer which is the best path to take. And that wait-and-see attitude can make a lot of decisions pass them by. So they'll be waiting, and then that doubt will start to creep in as to, okay, should I have done it? Shouldn't I have done it? That regret is what they can experience, the regret of lost opportunities from staying too long in that neutral place, that neutral place of observation.
I think I just lost Anne. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, sorry, you
I'm
dropped
here.
Off for a moment. Yes.
Oh, sorry about that.
I'm
sorry about
moment.
That.
No, it's okay.
Did you get the end of what I was saying?
I didn't get the very end of that, no. Like that last sentence that you shared, I think. You were talking about how they tend to, they want that certainty, so they kind of wait, and that kind of trips them up in terms of making their decisions.
Exactly.
So what can help them? You said that, you know, they balance out the optimist, the optimizing.
They do. They do. And remember, the optimizing soul type has a tendency to fall in love with their decisions right away, right? So they tend to live in that future state almost immediately. So these two can really help each other. The learning style can help the optimizer to spot the gaps in their thinking and to see where maybe they haven't seen certain types of data, the data that might be disconfirming what they want to do. And same thing for the learning style, is the optimizer can, with their enthusiasm and their desire to push forward and their ability to live in that future state, is they can help the learning style to move off a dime when that landscape isn't totally clear. The optimizer is much more comfortable with a higher degree of uncertainty. So these two, and the interesting thing is they should and can help each other enormously. If they have to work together and they don't understand each other's approach, there can be a real conflict there. You can imagine if they don't understand the approach the way the other person is approaching it. But the learning style, a thing that they can do if they find that they are missing out on too many opportunities, if they're finding that they're staying in that neutral place of observation and opportunities are passing them by, is to work to get more comfortable with a higher degree of uncertainty, to understand that really 75% certainty is your jumping off point. And that every higher degree of certainty you try to get beyond that has diminishing returns. That once you're trying for that 80% certainty, that last 5% takes too long and doesn't give you the benefit that you're looking for. That you're going to miss a lot fewer opportunities, and you're going to find you're still going to have a very high rate of success if you just get to 75% certainty and trust that remaining 25% will take care of itself.
That's such great advice. What about the efficient soul?
Sure. So the efficient soul is more focused in terms of how we all approach problems. They are more focused on figuring out what to do, on the planning aspect of what's the approach we're going to take with this problem. And the efficient soul is, their real strength is that they are highly strategic. They are the most strategic soul type. So they tend to see the problem, anything they're approaching, like a chessboard, to be able to look at it from way above and look down and see all those different pieces. And they'll understand the strategic value of each of the pieces. So any problem that you're dealing with, is they're going to be able to have sort of almost an emotional detachment from it and be able to understand what's the value, what is important about this particular aspect of the problem that's going to matter to my end goal of getting that queen, right? What do I need to do to get there? So they're extremely good at knowing how to use all the pieces on the board in order to accomplish their goal as effectively and as efficiently as possible. It really is an amazing talent to watch. And their decision style is in terms of how they operate, it really is with that efficient method, is that they're interested in collecting information, but they are only specifically interested in the right information. They're very particular and they don't want every detail. They want that top line summary, right? But it has to be high quality information. And they're going to be very, very motivated to action. They want things to get moving very quickly. So their decision process is going to be, it's going to be fast, efficient, focused on just the critical pieces of information. And then, you know, where doubt can creep in for them is interesting, is that the efficient style, they really, their whole focus is on action and getting things moving and understanding the strategy. And they may come up with this whole strategy, and I'll tell you what, they will be right. It is a great strategy, but it's rare that a strategy can be completed all by yourself. And the efficient style, its particular soul type, because it takes time to be able to communicate that strategy to other people, they don't always spend that time. And they may find they're marching halfway down the hill and nobody is following them, that they haven't explained their thinking to anybody. And that's where ambiguity can creep in, right, is that they'll be looking behind and saying, wait a minute, I thought I had this great idea. Where is everybody? How come no one's with me, right? Why are they all resisting me? And it's simply because of the way that strength they have, that efficient approach doesn't necessarily give them the time or the desire to communicate their thinking to other people. So it's that the need to bring other people along, that's where their doubt can creep in.
That makes perfect sense. So then what about the coaching soul?
So the coaching soul, and they're also focused on this aspect of problem solving, of how do we use our resources in the best possible way, in this planning aspect of this of problem solving. But rather than focusing on all of the resources, coaching soul types are focused on people, on those one-to-one people relationships, and they have an amazing talent of being able to look at anyone and being able to see that person as their best possible self. It's almost like they can look right into your psyche and understand the very best parts of you, the highest that you are capable of. And that is truly how they see you, in the here and now. And it may be a part of yourself that needs to be developed. It may be a part of yourself that you're not even aware of, but they see it. Not only are they aware of it, but they see it as an absolute possibility of who you will be. So when they interact with you, that's what they mirror to you. They treat you as if this is true about you, as if you are this great, this best version of yourself. And it inspires people to live up to that, to live up to that version of themselves. So they are amazing people developers. They bring out the best in other people, so they can be phenomenal managers. They're great with people. And that's why they're called the coaching soul type. And where it gets in their way in terms of doubt is, it's again, is their strength. Is their strength is being able to see the best in people. They're also able to see the best in every choice that they make. And that can get them in trouble, because when they're evaluating, it doesn't matter if they're picking an apple at the grocery store, they will see what's best about every apple they see. So it's very hard for them to narrow down their choices. Is they can end up starting out thinking, I'm going to only evaluate these three options, and then number four will come walking in the door and they'll see what's best about that one. And they end up getting choice overwhelm, where they are trying to choose between so many different things. They have a hard time discerning which one is best. And so they can experience a lot of doubt on the front end of their decisions. And the advice I would give to them is to be really cognizant, number one, of their priorities in the decision, not to get too caught up in what everything, every strength that everyone offers, to be really clear before you start looking on the problem that you're trying to solve, on what are the specific attributes that you need for your problem. And then the second thing is to limit the number of options that you allow yourself to consider, to keep it to limited to no more than 3 to 5 options. And that will make a really big difference.
So then there's number 5, the expressive soul.
Yes, the expressive soul. And they are focused on another aspect, a different aspect of problem solving, and that is getting us aligned. So what they do, the expressive soul type, they have an unusual ability to tap into their emotions. They're extremely connected to their emotions, and they're able to express the thoughts, the feelings that the rest of us have but don't have the words for. So they're able to look into any particular circumstance and find that emotional truth, right? So if you're working together on a team with somebody who is expressive soul type, is they will know the story, they'll know the purpose that unifies and makes sense of whatever hard work, whatever struggle, whatever difficulty you're going through, and they can get everyone aligned behind that common purpose, behind this unifying story. And they do it by tapping into that emotion behind it, by understanding the connective thread that all of us feel, but none of us knows how to express. So they'll say what you're feeling before you're even aware of it, and they'll say it, and you'll think, oh my gosh, how did they know? That's exactly right. They give you the words to speak your truth, which is an amazing talent. They're particularly good with, you know, like I said, with story and metaphor. They really are able to express for us. And they do that through this direct connection to their emotions. And emotions are how we actually make choices. We always think that it's through our head, through that logical reasoning. But the moment of choosing comes from your emotions, from feeling which one you like best. And because the expressive soul type has that direct connection to that feeling, they tend to be very, very fast decision makers, almost impulsive decision makers. And what that does, the fact that they're so quick, when you're in a meeting with them, they are going to be the first ones to have a point of view. And that point of view, it makes them incredibly persuasive. So they're able to use that to their advantage in an enormous way. They're able to think on their feet, and what they say resonates at such a deep level. But on the other hand, that quickness can also be their downside, is that when they're being impulsive on a particular decision, and the word impulsive, by the way, we frequently give that a really bad rap. We always associate it with, you know, kids blurting out in class, or with, you know, addiction issues or whatever. Impulsiveness is a very positive side as well, and it really is that ability to get in touch with that emotion and to be able to move quickly, to think and feel your way to the right answer very, very fast. So it actually gives you many, many good things. But on the downside, because an expressive soul type may commit to things in the now very quickly, they may not always be thinking ahead to what they're committing to. And they might overcommit. They might commit the same half hour to 3 different things. And so they can end up getting into trouble later when they realize they don't want to do that, or they don't have time to do it. So it's that living in the now can get them in trouble.
I can see how that could trip them up for sure.
Yeah.
Having that future point of view. So we'll be back after the break with Maura Van Tucker, and we're talking about her book, Undoubtedly Awesome. You're listening to OhmTimes.com.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OhmTimes Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OhmTimes Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
And we're back. Again, this is the Intuitive Transformations radio show on OhmTimes.com. And this is Sylvia Henderson with my guest, Ann Tucker. And Ann, before we go into the last two of the soul types. Can you let everyone know how they can find your book and how they can connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my book is called Undoubtedly Awesome, and we have a website by the same name, which is undoubtedlyawesome.com. And what's fun is if you go there, there is a survey on the site. It's a free survey, and it's got just those three questions you need to answer. And the questions, they vary depending on which soul type you are. So you'll take three questions, and it's going to give you your soul type and some information about it that is different from what's in the book. So even if you buy the book, you should still go check out the website. And my contact information is on that site as well. And in addition, there's also wisdomsoup.com, which we'll be launching in just a couple weeks here. So that's going to be an online social learning community for spirituality and personal growth.
That's exciting. So exciting. I can't believe that we are in the last segment of the show already. We have two more soul types to get through. So let's talk about the experimenting soul.
Sure. So the experimenting soul, so they are focused on, again, a very different aspect of the problem, which is getting us moving. And they are focused on that feeling of action. So the way the experimenting soul makes decisions is they tend to approach things. They have all of us have intuition, and the way that they use theirs in their problem solving is when they look at a particular problem and they look at the information that's available to them, they have the ability to discern what are the key pieces of information, what are the three things that really matter about that. And then they don't get drawn up in all the other detail. They just push the other stuff aside. They focus in on what matters. They will pick an option that is likely to work, and then they are off and running. So if you're ever having a discussion with an experimenting soul and you're making a decision together, by the end of that decision, by the end of that talk, that initial talk, they're going to be moving. They're going to be moving in that direction. They want to know the plan of action. They're going to be off and running. And what's interesting about it is they've got this plan A that they're using. And but as they go, they're constantly scanning the landscape, constantly looking for new information, for something new that might change their minds. And they always have plan B in their pocket. So what it does is it makes them incredibly good at, because they're so fast and they're so action-oriented, they're really great in emergency situations. They're really great in any industries that are very fast-moving and that need you to be able to be flexible and to be able to respond in real time, to change your direction easily. That's where the expressive soul, the experimenting soul really, really shines. But the gift that they bring to the rest of us is that they do something that most of us really, really lack and really, really need, is they bring momentum, is that the rest of us can have a hard time, especially as we're struggling with doubt. We can have a hard time getting things started, that initial step we have to take, right? And it can be that inertia of getting off the dime, getting up and moving. And that's the experimenting soul's real forte, is they can't hardly help themselves. They're like a whirling dervish of energy, and they just come through and they pick everybody up and they get you marching in one direction. They tell you to stop worrying about picking the right direction and just move, and you'll figure it out as you go. So they're incredible people to have around for that. That what can end up getting in their way from a doubt perspective is, again, the opposite of an aspect of their strength. The fact that they do continue to scan the landscape, trying to adapt and change all the time, what ends up happening is they never fully commit to any decision that they make, is that they will start moving. And they'll be always testing their decision, constantly testing it. Is this the right thing? Is there something better? Should I keep looking? And they always have that plan B in their pocket. So they never get truly emotionally invested in their choice. And what ends up happening is it prevents them from ever really feeling as satisfied as they could with their choices.
That makes really good sense. So then what about the collaborative soul?
So a collaborative souls, they are again focused on getting us moving, but they do it from a different perspective. They are really focused on the collective, on the group, on all of us. They're most interested in ideas that raise all boats in a rising tide. And they you can find them frequently at the center of groups. They're usually the heart of a group, bringing everyone together, and they thrive in that group environment. And they are something specific about the collaborative souls in terms of how their decision style works, and the way that it shows up is they tend to be very measured, very reasonable decision makers. They tend to go through things in a very measured way. They don't like to be rushed, but they tend to go through all the steps at a pretty even pace. They tend to constantly be striving for whatever can grow or improve themselves, the people around them, whatever they're doing. They're always reaching for something that is better. And they're doing this for the group, like I said, for the collective. The strength that they bring to the rest of us is they tend to be able to bring everybody together, bring everybody along in a decision. They do that by creating consensus. So they will, they'll be the ones that go around and make sure that every person who's a stakeholder in the decision has had their say and has participated and is bought into the choice and is willing to come along. So that ability to create that unification is what's so important. And what can get in the way for them is because they are so focused on not only on reaching for that best possible outcome and on bringing everybody along, they can be real perfectionists with themselves and with everything in their life. And they can be very, very affected by the fear of failure, the fear of getting it wrong. So that can end up holding them back. The worrying about making the right choice can end up bringing too much doubt into their process.
You know, it's interesting because how we make our decisions greatly impacts our interpersonal relationships, especially
our
very close relationships, like in families and in marriages and in the work environment as well, you know. And so are there some soul types that just don't, you know, are there certain soul types that connect better with other soul types? Is there an ideal pairing of soul types? And I know we only have a little bit of time left, but, you know, which ones would those be that would really play well together? Conversely, are there some soul types that just don't get along well?
It's a great question. And it is, and it was, I ended up using this model extensively with teams, you can imagine, because it does give you a ton of insight into how people get along. And yes, there are some soul types that can connect more easily, but really it depends on how do you feel about someone who has opposite strengths to yours, whose weaknesses and strengths balance out yours. And some people find that to be really, really abrasive, and other people think, ooh, that's just the person I need. So many of us end up marrying what I would consider to be their opposite soul type, which is you might find that your spouse is, boy, they do things really different from me, and that infrequently the people will pair up with someone who is essentially, in terms of their strengths and weaknesses, their exact opposite. But that's not 100% rule. So it depends on the individual. You might find that many of your friends fall into the same soul type category, and they're not necessarily going to be the same as you. In a work environment, people tend to gravitate to people who that do have the same soul type as themselves. And the reason for that is because at work, what we're doing is thinking and solving problems. So you're going to be drawn to people who are solving problems in the same way that you are. So people will frequently promote people who have the exact same soul type that they do, which is interesting to see. Even though in a perfect world, a perfect team would contain one of every soul type, because each soul type has different strengths that they're bringing to the table.
Yeah, everyone has a positive contribution to bring together. And I think you're right.
Right.
There's some personalities, you know, that because their decision-making process is different, it can be abrasive, you know?
Right.
And people like, I don't like that person. And it's probably just boils down to them having a different decision-making soul type more than anything else.
That's exactly it. It was interesting. There was two guys that I was working with. I was on a team, and they were just mortal enemies in this company. And what was tragic about it is that they were both critical to the business. They were both extremely important, high value employees, and they just did not get along. And so my job was to come in and to figure out why and to help them get along better. And interviewing each of them, the things they said about each other were hilarious. Is that I'll call one of them Bill, and Bill talked about the other guy who I'll call Sam. He said, well, Sam is just a total micromanager. He never wants to get moving. He's stalling me. He's blocking me at every point. you know, I can't get anything moving because Sam is in my way and he's doing it on purpose. Right. And then you talk to Sam and he's talking about Bill and he says, Bill is a terrible communicator. He won't tell me anything. He's keeping secrets from me. So these two guys are seeing each other in the worst possible light. Right. And what we've got here is we've got one experimenting soul and we've got one coaching soul and they don't understand each other at all. So when I brought them together and I said, okay, you know, Bill, what Sam is doing is Sam wants a plan. Sam needs a plan. Sam wants to know what's going to happen over the next 6 months. And he's not trying to block you. This is his way of solving the problem. And here's the value he's going to bring by doing it. Is he's going to look through and look at all of the mitigation that you need to do. He's going to see ahead and look at and plan out for you 6 months from now what are the resources you're going to need then. This is what Sam's going to bring to the table. And then, Sam, I want you to look at Bill. Bill is not keeping secrets from you. Bill doesn't have a plan. It's not that he's keeping his plan from you. He doesn't have one. He doesn't work that way. He is an experimenter. He's got an option, and he's going to get moving with it. And if it doesn't work, he's going to adapt along the way. And here's the value that's going to bring, right? That's going to bring momentum, and it's getting to get you started. And then we would go through how they could work together. And once they understood this about each other, they understood that they were not on purpose trying to harm each other, that they just had a different way of coming at the problem and understanding what they each could bring. And by the end, they literally, these two guys who had hated each other for literally years, they hugged by the end of it. And it was just that awareness, that understanding each other. Yeah, it was really, I think, life-changing for them. So it can make a really big
difference.
That is
fantastic. It really is about understanding our unique giftings versus feeling mm-hmm. that we're being attacked by someone else's unique giftings.
Right.
And taking it so personal. Wow, that's brilliant.
Exactly.
I just love that. I love that. So I know we're coming up to the end of the show. And real quick, I'm just very curious, Anne, what is your soul type?
I'm an optimizer, so you could probably tell because I came up with this model.
Love it, love it, love it. Ann Tucker, thank you so much for joining us today. I really do appreciate you spending time with us. Everyone, her book is called Undoubtedly Awesome, and you can learn more about her at undoubtedlyawesome.com and in a few weeks, wisdomsoup.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful week, and know that you are greatly loved, and I really do value you. Take care, and have a wonderful day. Goodbye.